computer. And I'm going to say good morning and good afternoon because we don't know where people are. My name is Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio.
This is Kathy.
Also with Zen Parenting Radio.
Yes.
So this is a virtual presentation on sexual education for the 21st century. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that have done this before with us because most of the people on here, I think I got about 40 people here. Most are from Team Zen, but some are not. Mm-hmm. So for those of you newbies, we're going to do some talking, but we're going to allow for some back and forth Q&A probably at the end, but we'll also probably invite you to kind of pause and say if you have any questions. There's a few ways you can kind of jump in. One is there should be a chat box somewhere. If you kind of just move your mouse around, there should be like a little bubble with three dots and chat. That's a way we can kind of communicate with each other while we are going through this. So you can be typing in, or you can also raise your hand if you kind of find yourself in the box. There should be three dots in the upper right-hand corner, and they'll give you the opportunity to raise your hand. And before we start, I want to say hi to many people who are here. Patricia, Megan, Stacy, Kristen, Holly, Sheila, Katie, Jeannie, Sarah, Kelsey, Kelly, Helen, Alyssa, Melanie, Nikki, Kim, Victoria, Lindsay, Peggy, Jennifer, Don, Emily, Kate, Anne-Marie, Christine, Kathy, Millie, Liz, Francisco, Jamie, Kathy, Kimberly, Sandra, Sharon, Melissa, and Elaine, and Brad.
And Brad.
Don't forget about Brad. So we did this talk a week ago Monday in front of about 70 or 80 parents, and it took 2 hours, and we kind of rushed through it. So we have an hour here. So we don't expect to get to everything. And really this is an overview of a lot of stuff. We could spend 2 hours on each of these main topics, which is what is consent, what is sexual assault, what do we want, what is harassment, what do we want for our kids as far as teaching them about sex, role modeling sexual attitudes to our kids,
values,
all that good stuff. So we're just going to jump right in. But before my sweetie starts, some of the history, you know, we are, as Kathy will probably say, we were born as sexual beings. And most everybody who's on here, I think everybody's on here is obviously an adult. And most of what we learned about sex is from our upbringing. And I can't speak for everybody, but my sex talks with my mom was one night and it didn't go real well. Let's just say that. I didn't get really anything from my dad. So the idea of this is anybody who's on this call are already paying more attention than most of our parents did, I'm guessing.
It's a different time.
It's a different time. And it's so different, especially in the last 2 years for obvious reasons. So the idea is to like not shame our parents for not doing what I wish my mom and dad taught when I was growing up. Instead, take what they gave to us, which was valuable, and then let's evolve and grow past of what it is that we need to learn. Because a lot of this is, you know, how do we talk to our kids about sex? But a lot of it is, what is our own attitude towards sex? And as you know, if you listen to the podcast, most of what we do is about role modeling the behavior that we want to see in our kids. So what is, do we get uncomfortable when we're talking about sex? Because if we get uncomfortable, then you can be pretty certain that your kid's going to get uncomfortable. So the more normal that you can make this, the more powerful it'll be. So before I turn it over to Kathy,
you've said that three times.
I am going to just tell you that we're going to be sharing the screen. We might be bouncing back and forth between sharing the screen of the PowerPoint that we might work off of, or we might just keep it with the faces. We'll see what it is. And Millie helped me and said, Jennifer's not muted. So thank you, Millie. Let me see if I can find Jennifer. There she is. Wonderful. Thank you for telling me that. So how do we want to start?
Now for real.
Sweetie?
Okay. So I'll start. I just want to say that I am totally here and I am down for this hour, but I'm a little tired. I had two nights out, not like party nights, but like,
you were partying on a Monday and a Tuesday.
Went to see Glennon and Abby on Monday and went to see Michelle Obama and Oprah last night. So Todd had to wake me up like about 15 minutes ago. So I'm like, I'm gearing up and I always come back, but it'll just take me a minute. So I guess to start talking about this, Todd said, he just said, you know, his parents didn't talk to him about this when he was, when he was young, but I think even if they would have, Todd, you probably would have fought them on listening. So I think sometimes we have kind of amnesia about that time.
Sure.
If your dad would have said, hey, let's talk about this, you probably would have been like, you know, I know already, or I don't want to. So a lot of times this is...
But that's because they never brought it up.
Right.
One thing we want to start and close with, this is an ongoing conversation with your partner, with your kids, and everything else. It never stops.
Right. So if it is a ongoing conversation, if it is a way of communicating with your kids from very early on, then all these conversations inevitably become easier and they become more normalized. And something we did when we had this talk in our community was we started by going through how you can talk to your kids, you know, from 0 to 2, from 2 to 4, from 6 to 8, you know, like the different phases of discussion, which we don't have time to go through all of that in detail. But what I will say is every phase of development has a necessary communication. Just as, for example, when they're really young, calling the body parts of your children by their real names.
Say penis and vagina, yeah, for goodness sakes.
Instead of making up names, which somehow indicates that the real names are not okay to say, which you want to like help them build a sense of comfort with their own bodies. And the way you do that is you talk about their bodies in real terms. And then as they grow, that grows, meaning they start to talk about, you know, you start to, if they have questions, you start to answer them openly. If you don't feel like you can answer the question right away, say, you know what, that's an important question, I'm going to get back to you about that. Like, if you don't feel like you have an answer that feels good to give yet, then give yourself some time, but always let them know that their question asking is valuable, important, and that you are very up to having those conversations. Why? Because this is not the thing that I always hear from parents is that they're worried about having these conversations too early or about what to say because they don't want to, they don't want their children to lose their innocence. And the thing is that we have to remember is that's really based in fear, because our children, as Todd said, when they are born, they come into the world as sexual beings, and that has nothing to do with what they see or what they experience. That's just what being a human is. Part of being a human and perpetuating our species is being a sexual being, where you need to understand your body and you need to understand the feelings that you're having, and you need to not be shamed for the feelings that you're having, and they need to be normalized and they need to be discussed with a sense of values around them. Avoiding the conversation is what creates the problem.
Sweetie, what do you know about abstinence-only sex ed?
Well, abstinence-only sex education is actually proven to be actually quite harmful in two ways. Number one, the rates of pregnancy go up, and also the rates of STDs and everything around sexuality, because kids, when they're curious and they don't have information, they take, you know, everything into their own hands. Whereas if they have information and they have an available person to communicate with, they don't need to take matters into their own hands. They have information. They don't have to learn through experience. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's not that you don't teach abstinence. It's not that that's a bad thing. It needs to be combined with not just, because a lot of times I think we treat abstinence as this is not something you need to think about now. This is not something that you're going to do. This is not something we're going to discuss. And it's a shutdown conversation. Or it's, you can't think about this until you're married and partnered. And we all know that that's not the way we develop. It's got nothing to do with all the outside forces like media and porn and everything. It's just being a human. I was actually reading an article in The Atlantic yesterday. Our friend Ali Solomon was quoted in it. And it was saying that actually kids, now that they have more information and access to birth control and access to, you know, information, not just via Google, but parents who are becoming more enlightened about this, they're having sex less frequently now than they did in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. What do you think about that? I was like, what? Like, I was kind of like looking for all of the, you know, stats like to back this up. And I'll send you, when we send this email to you guys, I'll send you this article so you can read it, because it's very, it's an Atlantic article, so it's very long, but it's got amazing research about where we are with sexuality right now.
Well, and one thing I want to jump in with is, and this is the way we started the library talk, is what do you, and this is on one of the slides, but what do you want for your kids as far as their sexual experience? Have you talked to your partner about what's going to happen when your son or your daughter is 16 years old? Are you going to be okay with birth control? Are you not going to be okay with birth control? There's no right answer. Kathy and I have a certain idea of what we want to do. We have, our oldest is 15. But it's such an important topic and we spend so little time talking about it. Generally speaking, you know, we can teach the kids how to calculate the area of a triangle. We can teach them how to, you know, dissect an English sentence properly, but we don't spend time talking to them about this most important thing. And if we just leave it up to the schools, that's probably not the best way of doing it. So you want to have an ongoing communication with your partner, just so you know, like, you know, because the husband might be like, well, I don't want my son practicing sex at all until he's 21 years old or 19 years old. But you might be like, well, that's not very realistic. Most kids, what is the stats? Most kids are having sex. Half of the kids
have had sexual experiences between 15 and 19. It's like 52%.
Right. So talk with your partner, if you have one, of what you want to happen.
Well, and I think, you know, basically what you're doing is you're setting a tone for what your value system is in your home. You want to make sure your children understand your value system. A lot of times parents will say, well, they should have understood because we went to church, or they should have understood because of a movie we watched together, or they should have understood because of the way I talked about it. But you need to be very clear. This is what we believe in this home. This is what we hope for you. At the same time, having a hope for your child and saying, we hope let's say you were focusing on abstinence. We hope you wait until you're in a committed partnership or till you're married or whatever. That may be your hope, but at the same time, they need to learn about everything around it so they're very well educated. And what I mean by that is they need to understand what birth control is. They need to understand what how their body works, and you know, they need to understand STDs and what they are. And by talking about it, this is what's so important. By discussing these things, it's not permission. It's actually quite the opposite. When you discuss sexuality and you discuss options and consequences with your children, it actually increases, this is research, increases how long they wait to have sex. So the more information they have,
the better off,
the longer they wait. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yes, educated decisions. Exactly. Like they actually, if they have the information, then they make better choices. It's just, so going back to how I started, our fear is if I give my kid information, they'll lose their innocence. It's actually quite the opposite. They are already having, I mean, again, you guys know we work with young girls and we have daughters and, you know, when I say we work with young girls, Todd's worked with boys who are in fifth grade. I've worked with girls who are in fifth grade and eighth grade and so on. And these kids are having these sexual feelings when they're starting puberty, which tends to start around 8, 9 years old now. And when I say sexual feelings, I don't mean they're going to act on something right away, but they're having feelings and it's confusing. And if we can tell them that that's normal, rather than shame them and say, no, you can't have that feeling till you're 15 or 17. That doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. They're already having it. So saying to them, the way you're feeling in your body or your, you know, desire to touch your body or whatever it may be, that's totally normal. That's normal. But then you start to create some boundaries around it. If you are going to, and this is when they're very young too, if you are going to touch your body, that's actually done in private. Before you make any big decisions, please come talk with me so we can discuss the options. You know, it's starting to make them comfortable with the idea of sexuality because, like Todd said, what is your long-term goal for your children? It's one thing to say, I want to keep my kids and my teenagers safe. But once they are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and they are partnered, and they do have, as an adult, they will have a sex life. Don't you want them to have a healthy one and not one where they feel ashamed or stunted or embarrassed? So if you start this process early, not only does it help them make educated choices, but then it also gives them a sense of self where they can have a healthy sex life in their later years.
So we're about 15 minutes in. Yep. We just basically did the overview. Yep. We're not going to get to everything. So let me be very honest with everybody. I'm going to try to share the screen just to see what happens.
Okay.
Let's see, share. So hopefully you guys can see that. So let's see. Can you guys just, Jennifer, can you give me a thumbs up if you can see the PowerPoint? Awesome. Okay. Okay. So we did that.
One more thing I want to say about this slide, and then we'll move on, is when you're talking to your kids about sex, remember that sex is not just a physical act, and you don't just talk about the mechanics of sex. You talk about how it's related to emotions and how it's related to their spiritual life. This is a piece a lot of times that we miss as parents. We forget it's not just about mechanics of, you know, penis and vagina and this is where this goes. It's about, this is when you have this experience with someone, this is an emotional experience. This is something that is chosen not just by your body, but by your mind and your spirit. And it's got a lasting impression. The young girls that I have talked to who have chosen to have, who have chosen to be sexual early, what they say they didn't know or didn't understand was how it has a lasting impression. Mm-hmm. So that's something we need to talk to our kids about. What does that mean to have an emotional and spiritual connection to those choices? Okay.
All right. We talked about that one.
Or that purple line.
I have no idea what that, there's okay. A purple line. Hopefully you guys can't see it, but it's okay. Not too terribly distracting. We talked a little bit about this. So we don't want to go through every bullet point. We want you guys to kind of have this, and we will email this to you. Actually, we already did email it to
yes.
you. I did play with the formatting a little bit, so it might look a little bit different than what we sent to you. I just wanted to make the font as large as possible. Is there anything on here you want to talk about, sweetie?
No, but like Todd said, just go through these so you can see what the statistics are. And I think these were from 2012, 2015, because they only do this kind of census information once every 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. So, but just to kind of give you an indication that it's about half of teenagers.
Minimize lectures. A lot. I grew up thinking it was one talk and then you're done. Or the dad kind of talking to the son for an hour. The way Kathy and I choose to do this, it's small, frequent conversations. And it's usually not sitting across from each other at the table saying, come sit down, son, daughter. We're going to have a big talk about sex. And I'm going to protect you. And I'm going to inform you. And I'm going to educate you. And I'm going to direct you of how to have a wonderful sexual experience as a teenager and growing up. This is small, frequent conversations, sometimes making lunches, sometimes while you're driving to soccer practice. But somebody's got to make a move, and we're the parents, and we have to make the move. If we're waiting for our kids to make the move and start asking these questions, you might be waiting a very long time. And the bottom line is the kids are going to get the information one way or another, and we would prefer they get the information from us as parents as opposed to their peers or as opposed to Google or as opposed to all the porn that's available out there. You need to make the move. So go ahead.
And a lot of times the reason that they're going to Google or to porn is because they absolutely do need information about this because everything is changing in their body. So I want to, like, I'm not going to step too far back here, but because we're already on teenagers, for example, with my girls, with talking about their body changing puberty and them getting their period, I started talking about those things very, very early, how a body changes when they were in second, third grade. Not because it was about to happen, but so as they started to get information from their peers or see things on TV shows, that they weren't hearing it for the first time. And again, normalizing, like Todd said, something like around them getting their period or having them period or having their period or buying pads or buying tampons or having cramps. These are just things we talk about. And these are not quiet conversations. These are not like, oh, shh. Yeah. Like in our bathroom, both of the bathrooms, I have big baskets next to the toilet with pads and tampons. They have been there since the girls were little girls. This is not something they've ever seen me hide or that we have to hide. And why is it open conversation? Because I think some people didn't grow up that way. I understand. But there's no reason for it to be a quiet conversation. There's nothing to be ashamed of. These are our bodies, especially women's bodies have been kind of looked upon as, you know, don't talk about it. Be really sexual, but don't talk about it. And we need to give especially our daughters ownership of their bodies. So they know that everything that they're, and I'll just give you one example. I know you have something to say.
Sorry.
One of my friend's daughters or an acquaintance of mine, because she didn't understand really what was happening when she got her period, the way she went into it was with a lot of fear. And then she now, when she gets her period, she feels like she needs to take a shower every day. She feels really overwhelmed by it. She always feels sick. She stays home from school a lot. And again, there may be some things that there that are truly physical, like, you know, having significant cramps. But I think it also has a lot to do with the fact that there's some, that she believes there's something wrong or something to be ashamed of or something to hide. And those are the kind of things we want to, you know, decrease from happening. We want to have enough conversation where by the time that happens, it's something that she has a lot of gaps already filled in. So now it's just about the actual experience versus the information. And with boys, it's the same.
Well, and you know, Kathy talked about how it's like the secret about women's bodies and periods and tampons and menstruation and pads. And I grew up not even wanting to say those words. And even as an adult man, you know, like the whole idea that it's embarrassing to go buy tampons for your wife is first of all, I used to have that embarrassment. I don't. I've evolved through it, but I'm
willing. He's had to because he goes shopping and sometimes he's got to buy those things.
And there's so many. We
FaceTime.
Yeah. I FaceTime saying this one or this one. If most of the women that are on this, most of the people that are on this call are women, but I invite you to, if you have a partner who's a man, ask them what their experience is with using the word tampon, and are you okay that your daughter is getting boobs? And
you can say breasts.
Sorry, breasts.
Using the actual terminology, because I think, don't you think men are more used to saying the word boobs than they are breasts?
Yes.
Yeah. So
that's
like,
why I just used it.
Right. Because
that's what I'm used to.
Exactly. And so like bringing
when I think of breasts, I think of chicken breasts.
I know.
When I think of boobs, I think of human women.
Right. And really we should use the, because we were just saying, using
right.
the appropriate terminology.
You're right. Are you okay that your 13-year-old is starting to develop her breasts?
Right.
The only way that you're going to have this open communication that Kathy and I are kind of saying that needs to happen is if both parties are on board. And if your husband isn't on board yet, you need to invite him saying, listen, this is important because the cost of not doing this is immense. What does that mean? I don't know exactly what it means, but if there's shame built in or if there's secrecy built in upon built upon changing bodies, the odds that our sons and our daughters are going to have a healthy relationship with their own sexuality plummets.
Decreases, yeah.
If you're not able to do that.
Yeah. So. Well, and it also just makes sure that our connection with our children remains strong, that they know that as they change and grow and as they become young adults, that we're comfortable with it, that we understand that. Because a lot of times with sons and daughters, it can be moms or dads, but I'll just focus on dads for a second. They start to separate from their teenage daughters a little bit as she starts to go through puberty. And while there's a normalcy with that, because the girls may need more space to grow, at the same time, they also need to know that their dad understands that this is, you know, is comfortable with this normal process of life.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on?
So there's a few things. One is, Helen wants to know if there's any books that we recommend for starting the conversation with her 8-year-old. And she also shares that her husband is on the call and he's better at her than this. So
good.
Hats off to your husband. I'm glad he's evolved. And Liz says, It's So Amazing is a really good book. It's called It's So Amazing. So
yes.
Thank you, Liz, for that. And continue to chat it up as Kathy and I continue to go through these slides.
Okay. So I want to go to the next one after teenagers. And like Todd said, we're going through, if there's something that you see on a slide that you want us to stop on, please tell us just in the chat. But I want to, you know, we're kind of moving from talking to teenagers about sexuality, their own sexuality, moving in to consent, which means them partnering and being with somebody else in many different ways, not just in the acts of, not just sex, but kissing, hugging, touching. And there's a lot of things that lead up to this. For example, two things that I can share with you if you have young children that kind of are a part of moving into talking about consent. If you have young children and you tell them things like, you need to go sit on Santa's lap, even though Santa's a stranger and they don't feel comfortable with that. But you tell them they have to because that's just what you do at the holidays. That's a confusing message around consent. If you tell them that they have to go hug Uncle Bill or Aunt Jane, even though they don't want to and they feel uncomfortable, but you say they have to because they're family, that's a confusing message around consent. So this is how early it starts.
Yeah, and this is an important piece because most of the time, the reason I used to say, okay, girls, go hug grandpa goodbye, it's because I would want my dad to feel loved, and I basically put his
needs
ahead of my own daughter's needs. And what's weird is you're like, oh, what's the big deal? It's just their grandpa and all that. What we're trying to do is be consistent with a message. And if we say, go hug grandpa, even though you don't want to, it's likely that maybe when they're 17 years old and somebody wants to hug them and they don't want to, that they will go ahead and do that anyways, because they were taught when they were 5 years old that I don't have a decision.
Yeah.
So we want to empower these young boys and young girls to own their body, to own every decision that gets made. And if something happens to them that they don't like, that they have every right and responsibility to say no and stop. And we're going to talk flipping that on its head about in consent. You know, we have it right here. The way that I condensed this slide is when I was taught, engaging with girls, whether it be in high school or colleges, what we were taught culturally is go as far as you can until they say no. So what we're trying to do is flip that on its head now. It's not about boys or girls going as far as they can until their partner says no. It's about asking permission every step of the way, saying, is this okay? Can we do this? And the other thing is, if there's a boy or a girl or a teenager or even an adult that doesn't feel comfortable asking, then they probably shouldn't be doing it in the first place. If you can't talk about it, then you probably shouldn't be doing it. This is some of the maturity that we're trying to instill in our younger people.
Yeah, we talked about that a lot at the library, was about how uncomfortable as adults we are even talking with our own partners about sexuality and our own needs and what's not okay with us and what our own sense of body awareness. So then when we're very confused, it can be very hard to talk to our kids about it because we may not be living what we really want to be living. And so as always with Zen parenting and with everything else in life, self-awareness is the first step. You know, where are you with this? And do you know that you own your body too? And that, you know, that you get to choose what feels right and wrong.
A few quick stats on consent. Only 8 states require sex ed classes to mention the word consent. And I have a feeling in a few years that that will be closer to 50, because consent, as we all know, whether it's Harvey Weinstein or Bill Cosby or whatever the case is, this is now mainstream. It used to be a hidden little secret. And now it's, you know, Me Too times up. It's all part of our conversation. So that's the first stat that kind of blew me away. Only 8 out of the 50 states require sex ed to mention the word consent. And for me, like, that's the foundation. The fact that we're not mentioning something foundational is crazy. Only 19% of boys understand what consent means. That's a very scary thing. So what we need to do is teach these boys what consent means. And then last thing, and this is kind of a little bit of a tangent, 73% of the time a woman knows her rapist, whether that's a date rape or whatever. We prepare our kids to, like, bring the mace when they go run or something like that, when in fact, if something bad were to happen, it's much more likely that it's going to happen to somebody that they know, maybe even somebody that they're dating in the moment. So obviously we need to keep our sons and our daughters safe with the mace and self-defense, but
that's only 30% of the time.
That's, you got to spend more time talking about when you're with a boyfriend or when you're with a girlfriend and they do something that you don't want them to do, you need to immediately tell them to stop. Now, vice versa, when you are pursuing somebody and you want to be in a sexual exchange with somebody, you need to ask permission every step of the way, every single time. Just because you had sex with somebody in September doesn't mean that you
have a right.
You have a right to have sex with them in October. Every single time. And by the way, body language is not a consistent way of finding out consent. It needs to be explicit and verbal. Body language can be misread in a million different ways, especially with newer partners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, entitlement plays a huge role in this. Like when we raise boys or girls with a sense of entitlement about that they are owed something or that they deserve something, that's where that confusing thing comes in of, not only do we maybe never talk about entitlement, but then they see it in the media, like, oh, if I take this person on a date, if I take them to dinner, or if we've been out four or five times, now I'm expected, it's expected that I get something back for it. Sex is not an exchange for something. Sex is a mutually agreed upon decision. It's not something that's owed. And I'm saying this, and many of you are probably saying, well, of course not. But have you told your kids that?
Right.
That's what this is all about, is that there's a lot of things as adults we know, and so we assume our kids know, but we've never said to them, nobody owes you sex, and you don't owe anybody sex.
Right. Just because, let's say, he took you out to dinner and he's been your boyfriend for a month or 6 months or 6 years, no, sex is never owed to anybody. Sex is a gift that is given. It's not something that somebody takes from you.
And you know what? I know that I'm being picky about words, but it's not even a gift, because it's a choice. It's like two people, because a gift sounds like you're giving something to somebody versus sharing it, right?
All right, I'm with you.
You know what I mean? And again, I'm totally wordy because I know that Todd understands all this, but even like, oh, that's a gift you give. That's what we used to say to girls. Mm-hmm. You know, your virginity is a gift you give. It's not. This is an agreed upon choice.
No, that's better. And the choice you make.
The choice you make for yourself and not for somebody else. And you know, for boys to understand that they, you know, and again, I already talked about entitlement, but that they're not owed, and not, and I want to like dive into something more recent. You know, this is what's really confusing. When the thing came up with Dr. Ford and the Supreme Court, I believe absolutely that what Dr. Ford said happened to her did happen to her. And you know what I also believe? That Brett Kavanaugh didn't think he did anything wrong.
Right.
I believe both things are true. And this is what's confusing to our society, is we try and do the dichotomy of someone's good, someone's bad. And what, and there is a good choice and a bad choice, don't get me wrong, but I really believe that there is a possibility that Brett Kavanaugh does not remember that and never has thought he's done anything wrong. Because a lot of boys and men, and some girls too, I'm sure, were raised thinking this is what we do. This is, I'm entitled to this. This doesn't affect anybody. This is just silly. This is just play. I get to do this. This is what I do to girls. And what we're trying to educate on is how that affects girls and women going forward. And how I work with women who were touched or molested or raped or attempted to rape them when they were very young, and it still affects their life today. Yeah. 30 years later, 40 years later, 10 years later, it is a big deal. That's what we're trying to educate about now. Mm-hmm. Is it's not about who's good, who's bad, who it's about. I think there is just a lack of information, and the lack of it, you know, like when we did this talk at the library, there were some men there and they were shocked by some of the statistics. They honestly didn't know. And so this is where we are now. Like, instead of, you know, we do need to call people out, and Me Too is necessary and Time's Up is necessary, and I'm on board with all that. And at the very same time, we need to look at this as being a time for education. Mm-hmm. Not just vilifying people, but education.
So we can do a whole workshop on this one slide, which we're not going to do, but consent is a huge topic. Okay. And it's just something that needs to be continued to discussed and understood. So anyways,
did you go back to, did you already do consent looks like this? And then,
yes, I mean, I didn't go through it, but yes,
okay.
It was
consent
up there.
Looks like this. And then consent does a few things under consent doesn't look like this. Okay. I think it's good. Okay. I just wanted to make sure we went over.
Okay.
Todd found this. So go ahead.
So this is like the nuanced gray area of the difference between harassment and assault and rape. And there's a, like, if I don't know what keyword I Googled, but there's a million of these pyramids. But obviously the easiest thing to understand is the top, which is, you know, gang rape, murder, rape, violence, things like that. That's obviously the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst. And then you kind of move your way down that pyramid, and then it comes into, you know, between each kind of platform, there's some gray areas even within that certain color. So as you move down, there's sexual coercion, there's threatening, even though you don't do anything to the person. If you threaten to do something, that is an attribute to the rape culture. And you know, what I call, you know, this toxic masculinity, which some people have pushed back on me, but I'll use it anyways. you know, groping. Well, I didn't rape her. I just kind of, she walked past me in the bar and I
grabbed her butt.
I grabbed her butt. You know, like I didn't even think about this one, but covert condom removal, like that's a crazy one. And, you know, some guys think that that is okay. And it's just, it's insanity.
Because they're only thinking about
themselves.
And when I say that, I don't mean that's what all men do. What I want you guys to hear, instead of hearing like that we're caught, there has been, we have educated men to think that there is an entitlement and that this is okay. And that this is what women want. And that this is what, if women didn't want it, they should have let me know, or they shouldn't have worn that. Or it's been a culture of blaming women for what happens to them, instead of talking to men about what's appropriate and what's expected. Mm-hmm. And so we have set up a system where, like Todd said at the very beginning, women are the ones who have to say no. And until they say no, nothing's going to stop. And then women are also to blame when someone attacks them. Mm-hmm. And that bottom on this hierarchy, that bottom about girls should stay home, you know, locker room banter, boys will be boys. We've also set up a system where anything like that, that does kind of touch on making us feel uncomfortable or making us feel like we're not being respected, we say, oh, you can't take a joke, mm-hmm. or that's no big deal, or they're just words. And what this hierarchy is demonstrating is how those things lead to the things that are higher. This is what rape culture is. When we can say locker room talk, when the president of the United States can say things like that, and our, you know, say things about grabbing people, and we laugh it off and say, oh, that's just locker room talk. That's what ends up, those things are pieces of the puzzle that lead to
right.
women being assaulted.
It builds on it. When I was growing up, if there was a kid if there's a playmate that I had and he was really uncoordinated, we'd say, oh, dude, you throw like a girl. And you'd be like, oh, that's benign. It's not, that's what
that's
I said.
Just words.
Those are just words. It doesn't mean that much. And, you know, it's weird because most of the audience here are females, but if there's guys out there that are listening, those are the seeds that get planted in boys that say girls are less than.
Correct.
And the only way that we take advantage of somebody is if we view them as unequal. So it starts with the very, what are considered innocent comments like, oh dude, you throw like a girl. That is what allows guys to do the things they do, because they do not look at our female counterparts as equal.
As peers. Yeah. Exactly. Perfect. So Jackson Katz, go to the next one.
So I'll read this. For those of you who might be listening in the car or whatever, I don't know if I can read it without...
Right here.
Oh, there it is. Thank you, sweetie. So this is from Jackson Katz. He's one of my mentors. He has a TED Talk. I think he might be in the resources at the end of this presentation. Yep. But this is what he says. We talk about how many women were raped last year, not how many men raped women. We talk about how many girls in a school district were harassed last year, but not about how many boys harassed girls. We talk about how many teenage girls in the state of Vermont got pregnant last year, rather than how many boys and men impregnated teenage girls. Even the term violence against women is problematic. It's a bad thing that happens to women, but when you look at the term violence against women, nobody is doing it to them. It just happens to them. Men aren't even a part of it. And he kind of goes through this much more profoundly in the TED Talk, but it's just another resource or example of how language gets twisted into making us guys, or any perpetrators, whether it's guys or girls, because I do want to say one thing. This isn't just happens to girls. Obviously, there's things that happen to men. A lot happens to young boys. So I want to be very clear that I'm not just saying this only happens to women. This happens to...
Sexual violence happens to all genders.
Now, most of the violence, most of the perpetrators are men. Are there women out there that are perpetrating? Yes, but most of them are men.
Even when there's violence against men, molestation or rape of men, I don't know if it's 100%, but majority of perpetrators are men against men,
yes,
too. So,
yes. And that builds into the culture of this toxic masculinity. And I could do a whole presentation on how that came to be and what we can do about it, but that's for another time.
Well, and that kind of thing, like sexual violence, just the language, it's not about sex anymore. It's just about power. It's just about domination. Mm-hmm. It's just about overpowering. And so it gets very confusing, but.
So Kathy Magnuson just put in the chat, when my boys say that, and I think she was talking about like throw like a girl, yeah, or something like that. I ask, what do you mean by that? So yeah. Instead of like scolding,
right.
It's an opening for a discussion that you can have with your sons and daughters, because the minute that you jump down their throat, they're probably going to get defensive. So instead, I like what you said, Kathy, which is help me understand that. And sometimes I need that advice, because when I hear one of my buddies objectifying a woman in front of me, I have in the past jumped down their throat and we get nowhere really quick.
Yeah, you stay curious about where'd you learn that, because
why do you think that's okay?
Yeah, or, and I've said to my girls, like when they've explained something to me that they've heard that I know isn't true, I'll say, oh, that's so interesting. I think you were given false information. Mm-hmm. And so instead of being scolding of them and shameful, I'm like, oh, someone told you something that wasn't true.
Yeah.
Or that thing that you're saying, that actually isn't statistically correct. And I say that to adults a lot too. Yeah. When they tell me things like, oh, women lie about sexual assault, I have a ton of stats ready to demonstrate. Not only that, I don't just need stats. I, for a living, I talk to women and girls, and majority of them have been assaulted or harassed. So I have my own statistical information.
So if there's husbands out that might be listening to this, one kind of entryway to understand what this is, because a lot of this is taking off your man glasses and putting on your female glasses and look at the world through a female's eyes. So this next slide that I'm about to show is a really good example of that. And this slide came from Jackson Katz, I believe. And he was talking to a group of people and he would say, okay, all the men in here, what have you done in the last 2 or 3 weeks that have kept yourself safe from harm? And all the guys kind of look at each other and they say stuff like, well, I lock my door at night or something like that. And then he goes over to the women and says, women, what have you done in the last few weeks to keep yourself safe? And the column on the right is obvious examples, and you can have 5 more columns like this. But, you know, always carry your cell phone. Don't go jogging at night. Lock all the windows. What, you know, are you drinking, you know, for maybe the college kids, drink out of a bottle of beer and make sure you open it and keep the lid safe from somebody dropping in there. What are you wearing? You know, all these things. These are the things that our female counterparts have to do on a, not even a daily basis, like on a every few hours basis of how to keep yourself safe. And I'm awestruck by how often I'll bring this up to certain guys and they'll be like, really? Like one guy in particular, I told him, like, you know, girls have to think twice about where they park their car in a garage. Oh, he's yeah. like, why? And he's a really smart, intelligent, successful man.
Yep.
And he had no idea.
Well, what did I just say to you? Our friend, our good guy friend, John Duffy, Dr. John Duffy, he just got a job at WGN. And he goes on at 11 p.m. at night. And I said to Todd, I said, and again, that's not something that Todd and I would want to do personally, but I said, if I got that gig, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't drive into Chicago at 11 p.m. at night. I used to go to WGN all the time and do a morning show, and I know exactly where you park and how you get in, and it wouldn't be safe for me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that we don't think about, like in terms of how a man walks through the world and how a woman walks through the world. There's a lot of things we have to consider. And sometimes men don't even, it's like Todd said, you're putting on a different pair of glasses. And what's important about these things is this gives us an indication of things that women have normalized for themselves, that we have come to believe. Let me say this. When I went to college, there was a lot of discussion about how girls should keep themselves safe. Carry mace, carry your keys a certain way, do these things. But no one was talking to the boys about what they should or shouldn't do. It was all on what girls should do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people were going off of the idea that it was a stranger danger rape situation, like that someone you would get assaulted by would be a stranger, which in 30% of the time it is. But 70% of the time, it would be a person you were at a date party with or a person that you met at a fraternity party. So, but no one was talking to the boys about their experience.
So we are going to, instead of saying, you know, only what not to do or how to protect yourself, we're going to be more proactive and positive of like, what can you do? So we're going to get into that. I don't know exactly.
We won't go.
We're not going to do these, but these are clips that will be in your PowerPoint that you receive. It's based off of a single talk, which is about an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm, it's excellent.
And the hyperlinks are there. I suggest that every man who you have any influence over watches that.
Your sons.
Mm-hmm. Because we don't know unless we're informed. And this does not get talked about. It's a bunch of really strong honest, vulnerable men sitting around a table talking about hypermasculinity, toxic masculinity, what we can do to be equal, stuff like that. So I
taking ownership for their own.
Yeah. What is take responsibility for your role in the world. And so this hour and a half, or maybe it was only an hour, I don't know, is one real good resource. And then we talk about this all the time, but there's another really strong documentary. I think it's on Netflix. It's called The Mask You Live In. And it's probably good for maybe 13 years old and up. I don't know if it's
below
13
that. And up.
So anyways, those are two resources.
So sexual assault. These are just the definitions so you can have an understand what sexual assault means. It's basically any kind of sexual activity that you didn't consent to. So when people talk about like, oh yeah, I grabbed her and I jumped on her and I kissed her and I did this, but I didn't assault her. That is assault.
That's assault.
So, you know, when it's like, oh yeah, I did that. I grabbed, you know, that is assault. And so that's kind of, we have this belief system that sexual assault just means penetration. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times even police officers, you know, well-meaning police officers will say things like, well, but did he rape you? Because if he didn't, then there's really nothing I can do. That's actually not true.
It's against the law.
It's against the law. Sexual assault and being grabbed in a sexual way is not okay. Now, let me say this because I brought up police officers. Not everything is about throwing men in prison. And not everything is about prosecution. That's not why we're teaching this. We're not teaching our sons so it's like, keep your son out of prison. Not everything is about that. It's about keeping us decreasing the trauma around sexuality with our daughters and our sons. If they have information, it's less likely that there'll be any confusion about this. Mm-hmm. This is not about, you know, because the pendulum has swung so far, we're talking about, you know, a lot of parents that we talk to now, the reason we want to have this class is, you know, mothers and fathers of sons are like, I'm so worried about my son. Someone is going to accuse him of sexual assault. You guys, I'm going to get to that slide next, but that happens so not often. Like the statistic is so minute. That's not what you want to be focusing on. You want to be focusing on how to teach your son what sexual assault is, what consent is, how to have a healthy partnership, how to treat somebody, listen to them and talk to them and communicate with them about sexual activity. And if they don't feel like they can communicate about sexual activity, they're not ready for it. Mm-hmm. That's right. Your indication right there.
All right. So we got about 13 minutes left and we got a ways to go. So,
okay. We kind of
sexual harassment. We talked a little bit about that locker room talk.
So this is the big one. So I just said this, but I want everyone to take a look at this. For those of you who are on the phone, I'll read it to you. Only 310 out of every 1,000 sexual assaults are reported to police. So that means that 2 out of 3 sexual assaults go unreported. So take that in. When we think about sexual assaults, we're always thinking about someone being falsely accused. 2 out of 3 people don't even ever report. Okay? That's how often this happens. In the U.S., 1 in 3 women experience some form of sexual violence in their lifetime. That's only reported, though. Okay, so I'm flipping that other one on its head. We're like, wow, 1 in 3 women, that's a lot. It's actually a lot more than that.
A lot more than that.
Because that's just reported.
Well, and the stat that I throw around, and there's so many stats, but there's enough consensus to be able to say this. Apparently, 1 out of every 3 college women are going to be assaulted.
Yes.
I have 3 daughters, so do the math. Odds are that 1 of my 3 daughters is going to be assaulted. And that,
unless they're given certain education and the people that they're around are given a certain education.
And that is the statistic that kind of like sends shivers down my spine. And this is about us educating our sons and our daughters, but mostly our sons, because those are the ones that are doing most of the perpetrating. They need to be informed that this is a big enough deal where we need to spend some time talking to our kids about this very topic.
So 91% of victims of rape and sexual assault are female. So that means 9% are male. So there are men who are victims of sexual assault, but 91% are women. Mm-hmm. Like we already said, in 8 out of 10 cases of rape, the victim knew the perpetrator. Mm-hmm. So we were actually saying 7 out of 10, and it's actually 8 out of 10. So it's 80%. Now this one is, we don't have to spend a lot of time here. I created this because I tried to talk about this at the library, and my daughter who was there said I didn't do a very good job explaining it. All I'm trying to explain in this false report, baseless report stat is that a lot of times we talk about false allegations and false allegations, when people are giving statistics, are often combined with what's called unfounded accusations. And unfounded accusations are false reports, which means that something that didn't actually happen, and a baseless report, which means something did happen, but it can't be proved in a court of law. Those become unfounded accusations, which often are called false allegations. So when we're hearing about statistics of false allegations, which is 2 to 8%, that's all the false allegations there are. That includes baseless reports where something did happen, but it just can't be proven in a court of law. So I know that's a lot of information. The point I'm trying to make is that percentage of 2 to 8% of sexual assault accusations are false. That is the exact same amount of false accusations when it comes to burglary, having your car broken into, I guess that's a form of burglary, any other kind of crime that's reported. So like there are 2 to 8% of people who will lie about that their car got broken into. But if somebody goes to the police station and says their car got broken into, nobody is saying to them, well, did it really? I don't believe you. Mm-hmm. So again, we have this misunderstanding about that women are constantly, you know, false reporting just to get back at someone. It doesn't work that way. It is so difficult. First of all, women don't want to go through the process of accusing because so many people don't believe them. So as we said, you know, the report rate is only 310 out of 1,000. And then second of all, if you do report, it's a whole process. And majority of the time, you're not believed. Mm-hmm. I was telling some other, at the library, I was telling people to listen to this new podcast that's out it's NPR. It's called Believed. And say his last name because I always say it wrong.
Larry Nassar.
I would say Nassar. It's Nassar, who had ended up abusing about 150 girls on the gymnastics team. And that doesn't even include his regular patients. And how he got away with it for so long. Everyone said, why didn't the girls report it? They did. No one listened to them. The police didn't listen to them. I mean, they would listen, but nothing would happen. They would believe Larry. So this is kind of the environment and culture we're in right now.
There's no reason a woman, a girl would believe that anything is going to happen because every element of our culture says we're not going to believe you.
Not only are we not going to believe you, we're going to blame you.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to do by telling you these stats is help you reshape, because it's not just men who believe women false report. Women believe women false report. That's what I struggle with, whereas when I talk to women who are like, yeah, but women do that all the time. Like, where'd you get that information? That is statistically not true. Not only that, but majority of women aren't even reporting. So this is what we need to flip on our head too, mm-hmm. is that when we're talking to our sons and daughters, they've been kind of culturally conditioned to believe that somehow women want to go before judges and lie about being sexually assaulted. That doesn't make any sense. Has it ever happened? I'm sure. But there's also been people, you know, the same statistic is true for people who said that other things have happened, that their car's gotten broken into or their house has gotten broken into. The statistic is like 2%. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, saying that.
Okay. You just talked about this, why women don't report. So we're going to skip over that.
This
really came
important.
From Mike. He spoke at our conference last year. These are proactives. You know, this actually came from somebody saying, well, how do I
keep my son
from getting falsely accused? And Mike turned it around and said, well, instead of keeping your son safe from harm, instead, why don't you teach him how to act and behave and what role do they play in this world? So are you teaching your son to treat every partner with dignity and respect? And you can insert son or daughter, but for now, I'm just going to say son. Son, are you using specific language to understand what partners want? Honor all partners' boundaries. Son, do you know what it means? Do you know that consent means sober, enthusiastic, and mutually wanted sex? Are we teaching our sons to intervene if you hear someone is being sexually degraded? Did you know that most false reports are incredibly rare?
Not just false reports.
Yeah.
False reports are incredibly rare.
Yes. Do you know that you're more likely to be sexually assaulted than to be falsely accused? So like, the bottom line is there's so much attention that goes on to making sure our sons aren't falsely accused, and instead you can spend a little bit of time doing that, but instead, why don't you spend more of the time teaching them how to treat their partners, their environment, their coworkers, their fellow students with dignity and respect, and you will be much further ahead.
And even the language is important. To say to your sons, I don't want you to be falsely accused. Here's some things to teach you. That's already setting them up to believe that women want to falsely accuse them.
Which they don't.
That whole belief system needs to be like kind of ripped down and start from, this is how we treat people, and this is what the expectation is of you. And then these, instead of be afraid of women falsely accusing you, do these things so they don't falsely accuse you. They understand how the language kind of sets the tone for what they believe.
You want to talk about this one?
Well, I just wanted to comment on the fact, you know, I kind of said this before, but sexual assault, someone I work with, women who have been sexually assaulted, and it's not just about the moment. It's not just about the experience or exactly what happened. It's about how they feel afterwards. It's the shame that they feel. It's the what they carry as far as blaming themselves. Mental wellness after sexual assault, that can go on through an entire lifetime. You know, post-traumatic stress disorder after sexual assault, you know, suicide attempts and contemplation is higher for people who have been sexually assaulted. It's a strong indicator of depression, anxiety, addictions. So a lot of times when we'll say things to women and men about, well, that happened a long time ago, it doesn't matter. It gets lodged in their body. It gets lodged in their mind about how they feel about themselves. And it's like any other trauma where it can last a lifetime. Now, when I say that, I don't mean there's no hope. I mean, if they don't talk about it, I mean, if it's something that they've blamed themselves and so they've internalized it, we can all decrease these symptoms by discussing it. And especially if we start to believe our daughters and our wives and our the women in the world about their experience, all of these things will decrease.
I read a blog and it said something like, hey dads, your daughter's not going to tell you when she gets assaulted. And the idea was that even though these daughters became survivors or victims of whatever assault may have come their way, they are so protective over their dad's, I don't know, feelings about it that they wouldn't want to disappoint. So we need to open up a conversation to say that, you know, hopefully this never happens, but I want you to be very clear and open that if something were to happen, there's no shame. I'm not going to judge you. We will help support you, because kids typically want to protect their parents from having icky feelings about them, because maybe the girl or their boy felt like that they played a role in whatever experience it was and they'll get in trouble. We need to explicitly tell them that they can come to us with anything.
And sometimes the person who assaulted them is their boyfriend or somebody that their dad may say, well, I'm going to kill him or I'm going to hurt him. And that doesn't help either. There needs to be an understanding of, we need to have a discussion about this rather than I'm going to go into being violent about it. Mm-hmm. Because that's a lot of times why girls don't tell their dads too, is they're afraid.
Sweetie, Millie wants to, before we get into questions, let's finish up the PowerPoint.
Yeah, it's done.
It is. Okay. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. And there's the resources. So let's stop sharing the screen. And I'm going to.
Here, read it. Because it's right now 1 o'clock.
Okay. I was going to try to unmute her. So Millie just says, we're good at pop culture. Do we have any ideas on age appropriate for their preteen daughter? She's 11 going on 12. That might be a good discussion material about sex. We've already gone to a mother-daughter workshop focused on puberty and sex. So she's aware of it. And we've just started the discussion. I just thought that pop culture might be a good launching point, because our regular discussions don't even come close to anything of a sexual nature. She generally cringes when there's any kind of serious talk, maybe watching a movie together. So I'm sure you maybe have one or two. It's everywhere. Every show you watch, there is some element, not every, a lot of shows that we watch, there is some element of sexuality. Well, whether it's Ross dating Rachel on Friends or whatever, and I know that I'm dating myself a little bit, but instead of saying, okay, honey, sit down and let's watch this movie, try to just have your radar on that when it does happen, just sneak these questions in or build it into the fabric of watching it, because that's safer than sitting across the table from your mom or your dad saying, let's talk about sex. It's easier to just kind of build it into what you guys are already watching. Now, do you have any ideas?
You know, it's funny, Millie. I watched pitch perfect with the girls this weekend. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely some, it's not super overt, but there's some sexual content in there built in different ways. And there's actually a scene at the very end where Anna Kendrick's character goes up to this boy at the very end and just kisses him. And I looked at the girls and I go, she didn't ask. Mm-hmm. Like, she just like assumes, you know? And again, they were like, yeah, like I want, you know, it's not just all, it wasn't just boy to girl. It was even girl to boy. You know, she didn't ask him if that was okay. And like Todd said, my youngest daughter has just started watching Friends. We've had talks about Ross and Rachel having a baby together, why they didn't get married, why they, you know, their relationship at all is so confusing. I'm trying to think what other things have come up recently. Because like Todd said, it comes up in every conversation. There's articles
that... Commercials that are on that objectify women. Honey, what do you think about those girls in the bathing suit? Do you think that they're showing who they are? Or why do you think that this is on TV?
Yeah.
You know, just build it into everything.
Yeah. And there are some, like, another thing you can do, because you're right, like, sometimes it's hard to have the conversation initially, but I send the girls articles, or I put articles, you know, give them to them to read. Like, this is interesting. You know, there's something in here that I think you might like. And then I can ask questions about what they read. Now, I don't do it like an assignment, like, you must read this and tonight we're going to discuss it. But like, this might be interesting to you. Or sometimes it's even just a meme. You know, it doesn't have to be a full article or a quote. It's a constant. And I know as parents, we're like, God, there's so many things to think about. I'm thinking about their education and their, but this one, talking about their safety with education or with sexual education, sexual assault. This is like an ongoing discussion forever. We're even going to be talking to our kids about this, hopefully, if we connect with them on this when they're in their 20s. So like starting it early and like offering them articles or talking about it as you're watching a movie or a TV show, just, and you don't have to bring it up for a long discussion. Just like, wow, I wonder why they ended up together. Do you think she really liked him? And your daughter may be like, I don't know. And then maybe you can just end with, well, I don't know if I would be with someone if they treated me that way. End of story. That's it. It doesn't have to be like, okay, now do we understand? We don't have to be super overt. We can just comment on it and get their opinion on it too. And the more we do that, the more normalized it will be.
So to close this, because we're 2 minutes behind, kind of the main points that I think is for us parents, what we need to do is make sure our kids know that their body is their own and that nobody has a right to their body, regardless of whether or not he or she bought dinner or he or she's been dating for 6 months. That this is an ongoing conversation that deserves a lot
time
of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And just the idea of consent. It's such an important topic. And there's a book called Can I Kiss You by Mike Domish, which I'm a fan of. There's a bunch of resources that we have at the end of this presentation that you can look into. If you ever want any more videos, blogs, whatever, I got a whole list of stuff. So just let me know, email me, and I'll be happy to do that.
And some of this stuff I will email you probably tomorrow when we email you the audio recording of this. I'll email you some resources too that you can look at, some articles. That Me Too episode with all the men, some of the documentaries, like, and you don't have to do it all at once, but so you have like a file so that you can have some resources when the time comes.
So there's one question that got echoed. Helen wanted to say, and then we'll close. How would you persuade fathers of sons that this is an important topic? And Kathy Magnuson had the exact same question. This is one of those things where I struggle with it because I'm so close to it. It's hard for me to remember why men don't think this is as important as I do. I don't know. Turn on the news. And I know this probably isn't very helpful, but most of the big challenges in this world, whether it's about sexual assault or whether it's about
mass shootings
or one country dropping bombs on another country, it's because there are men in positions of power that are buying into this lie that we are better, we are superior, we matter more than our female counterparts. You know, throw some statistics at Adam. Do you know that you know, 1 in 3 girls are assaulted on a college campus? Watch The Mask You Live In, or invite him to watch The Mask You Live In.
I would say show him, say, I just did this class and give him the PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm.
And say, I just, you know, and again, not like you need to read this, but will you go over this with me? Instead of telling him what to do, say, will you do this with me and go through this with
we
me?
We have done a bunch of podcasts on interview. Listen to the interviews that we did with Mike Domish. If you go to zenparentingradio.com, there's a search bar. Just plug in Domish, D-O-M-I-T-R-Z. And hit both of the interviews that we did with them. It's really valuable exchange between Kathy, myself, and Mike. I guess it depends on what your husband, how he chooses to learn. Does he want to learn? Does he want to learn about this? And if he's like, well, he's just not interested in this, then you as the wife, unfortunately, have to explain why this is so important to you.
To you.
And if it's, and if he loves you and you guys have a good connection, it shouldn't be too big of a leap. But
take it in doses, just like we do with our kids. It's not like he needs to understand everything, but will you at least look at this stat with me? Mm-hmm. Will you read this one article with me? Will you watch this documentary? Just little pieces. And, you know, without blaming, with love and respect and saying that I want us to be better for it. And, So
we sped through a lot of it. Hopefully you guys got some value out of it. Maybe we'll do another one with maybe just a Q&A, or we'll pick a specific topic. Maybe I'll come up with the interview. If you guys have any feedback for us, if you wish we spent more time on something or whatever, let us know. I see Sheila McHugh just joined us. She's our new Team Zen member.
Hi, Sheila. We miss Sheila.
We miss Sheila. So for those of you who are not Team Zen members, this is kind of what you get. The only difference is this is more like presenty.
Yeah.
Because we
most of the time we do talk.
Most of it's back and forth, and the teammates will say, my 8-year-old daughter's driving me crazy. Please help. SOS. And then we'll kind of talk through it. So it's kind of like a group therapy session. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in that, send me an email and I'll get you more information. But we took a really big topic and tried to narrow it down into 66 minutes.
And then everything else we're going to try and send you, you know, like that's why we sent you the PowerPoint ahead of time. And then I'll send you some resources in the next day or two, and you just take it piece by piece. And if, you know, like Todd said, if you want to join Team Zen and you have more questions, we meet twice a month. So mm-hmm. you can ask more questions.
And there's a Facebook community that is really powerful. Yeah. A lot of us kind of leaning on each other. So Kathy's got to go back to bed.
I do. I'm so tired. I love all of you. And I'm so glad you joined us. I appreciate you being interested in this, and please spread the word, not about us, but about consent.
Us too, sweetie.
About consent. Talk about these things in your community, sexual assault, talk to your kids, talk to, you know, friends. Like this needs to be an ongoing discussion.
And I want to say goodbye to Helen, Peggy, Millie, Anne-Marie, Lindsay, Emily, Kathy, Liz, Jennifer, Holly, Kim, Sheila, Kate, Stacy, Kathy, Victoria, and the old 979 area code and the old 404 area code.
Love you guys.
You guys keep trucking. Love you all. Be good.